Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
Yeah, but we won't know which side of the debate we're taking until we flip a coin. Winner of the coin flip gets to pick which side of the debate they want to argue.
And both of us will have to argue in favor of our respective positions, whether we agree with them or not.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Great Retirement Debate. Ed, how's it going today?
It's going great. I have a great topic. Actually, we're going to break one of our usual rules on this one. We generally stay away from politics and religion, but this will be a religious thing, to convert or not to convert.
Oh, yeah. There are definitely some people who feel pretty passionate about that. Conversion is a religion for some. Oh, wow. All right. Big topic today, a meaty topic. I guess I get to pick the coin flip again today. So I'm going to go with tails once again.
All right, here we go. What is it? Tails again. You're on a winning streak from the last few. And just so we're clear, we're talking about converting your IRA to a Roth IRA, which may be a religion for some people.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things, Ed, that has lifelong ramifications. We're talking about taking an account that, as you often say, is forever taxed to an account that is never taxed. I can't help it, Ed. Part of me wants to leave you with the option to convert, but I got to argue in favor of conversion. I'm going to leave you with the don't convert argument on this one. I'm sorry, but I think you're getting the short end of the stick today, Ed.
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows I'm a big Roth fan. But again, there's two sides to everything. And that's the purpose of what we're doing, to give you the pluses, the minuses, the benefits and drawbacks, so you can make the decision that's best for you. Nothing is all black and white. Some things are gray. Yeah, there's no decision, even with my favorite decision to convert to a Roth. There are reasons not to.
Such as?
All right, so I'll start it. Nobody wants to pay the tax, okay? If your hand starts shaking when you find out what it's going to cost, and you do have to pay the tax when you convert from an IRA to a Roth IRA, that's what we're talking about, from forever tax to never tax. Everybody wants to get to the promised land, never tax, income tax free for life, but there's a price of admission. There's no question. The Roth IRA is the best retirement account to own. The only question is, how much are you willing to pay for it? Like anything else. So that's one of the reasons. Some people just don't like paying tax before they have to. In fact, Jeff, you and I as CPAs both know, we were both trained as accountants to never, ever pay a tax before you have to. Always defer to put it off. So here, you can defer and keep deferring it, and you won't have to pay anything up front if you don't convert.
Well, that's a good argument
for not converting. I have others, but I'll.
All right. Well, good. It's going to take more than that, Ed, to win this argument, because I got a lot of ammunition on my side today. In fact, you know, you talked about deferring, which is great, but you don't get to do that forever. There's a time when, whether or not you want to defer, you don't get to choose that. It's time to pay the piper. Such a time is called the required beginning date. That is the time when you need to start taking required minimum distributions. And as we sit here today, Ed, you know, that's recently changed. The Secure Act took us from age 70 and a half to age 72. More recently, Secure Act 2.0 moved that back to 73 for roughly the next decade, then to age 75. But even at that age, many people still live beyond it, you know, into their 80s, 90s, and sometimes even beyond that. And at all those more advanced ages, people must begin taking required minimum distributions from their IRAs. Even if they're still working, if the money is in an IRA, it doesn't matter whether you're working or whether you're not, you must take required minimum distributions from your IRA accounts. And here's the thing. Some people are so good at saving and so bad at spending that they end up with a lot more money than they ever thought they'd have and that they ever would need. Now, admittedly, this is a very first class problem to be dealing with, right? I have too much money and too much income. But for some folks, once those required minimum distributions kick in, between those distributions that they have to take, between their Social Security income, between their interest and dividends and capital gains they may have from taxable investments. For some folks, God forbid, a pension, you know, something like that. Well, all of these individuals and these incomes come together and they can pour somebody into a much higher tax rate in retirement when they're not working and not earning than they ever had while they were working and actually trying to make a living.
Yeah. You mentioned one thing. I wrote that down. How do you spell that word you said? Pensions. What was that?
It's this, it kind of, like, you know how the dinosaurs were a historical artifact? Well, pensions came along shortly after the dinosaurs ended.
Yeah, right.
And much like the dinosaurs, they went away very quickly in kind of a flash. Yeah. Yeah, very few people today.
It was a check. I don't understand these companies. They just gave ex-employees money every month for the rest of their lives. They weren't even working anymore. All right.
Then the internet came along and everything went away.
Yeah. All right. So here's some other reasons you may not want to convert. And to be clear, and Jeff has to agree with this, we're not that he has to, but I think he will. We're not talking about all or nothing. A conversion can be partial conversion. So there's some middle point, you know, maybe smaller conversions. I'm not talking about whether to convert all or nothing. Some people think that. That's why I wanted to make that clear. So here's an example of somebody who might benefit from not converting. So for the people who think or maybe are thinking they're hearing this, I should convert everything and then I'll never pay tax on any of my retirement money, as Jeff said, and I'll never have those horrible RMDs, required minimum distributions. But if you normally give to charity, there's a great provision called qualified charitable distributions. It's one of the best provisions in the tax code, not used nearly enough. Where if you're giving to charity, and I'm not saying give all your money to charity for a tax benefit. If that was the case, give all your money away. You'll never pay taxes and you'll be broke. I'm talking about if you're already giving money, the whole key to doing the best you can with retirement savings is to get that money out at the lowest possible tax rate. With a qualified charitable distribution where you take from your IRA and you do a direct transfer to a qualified charity, you're getting that money out at 0% tax rates. If you converted everything and you still wanted to do that gifting, you wouldn't have any money to gift that you could get a tax benefit out of. Most people get no tax benefit, actually more than 90%, according to IRS statistics, get no tax benefit of the gifts they're giving to charities because most people take the standard deduction. Now, to qualify for a QCD, not everybody qualifies, but IRA owners that are age 70 and a half or older and IRA beneficiaries 70 and a half or older do qualify. And if they're 70, oh, here's a question for you, Jeff, a tough one. If they're 70 and a half, are they also over 65?
Let's see.
All right, time's up.
I lost it.
All right. So obviously, if you're 70 and a half, that means it's even more likely you won't take the standard deduction because you get the extra standard deduction for being 65 or over. So this is a way to get that money out to fund charitable gifts that you were making anyway, and you get better than a tax deduction. You get an exclusion from income. Now, if you converted everything, you wouldn't have that opportunity to get the money out at 0% tax rate. So if you normally give, and I have to believe most people give, now that it's hard to tell from tax returns now that most people take the standard deduction. But when I was doing tax returns, where before the tax law that changed a lot of that, where more people itemized, I would always ask people, did you give to charity? 100%. Oh, yeah, I gave. You know, I don't know. Everybody said, nobody ever said they didn't give. So I got to believe most people give, or they just say so on their tax returns. So if you're doing that, I wouldn't convert money you intend to give. Another reason, well, I'll let you chime in. I have more reasons not to convert. I can't believe the words that are coming out of my mouth here.
That's, well, it's, you know, you mentioned something about the IRS, and the IRS gets to implement tax policy, but they don't get to make tax policy. That is done by Congress. And if we've learned nothing else in recent years, it is that Congress can change things kind of, you know, at the snap of a snap of fingers, at the drop of a hat, Congress can change the rules. And one of those rules is what the tax rates are. And today, I know what the tax rates are. I know what my tax rate is today. I don't know what that is going to be in the future. And if we look at things like our national deficit, our national debt, our promises that we've made to individuals for Social Security and for Medicare and for all these other things, crumbling infrastructure. I mean, at some point, the question becomes, will Congress have to raise tax rates? And in fact, you know, you talked about the Tax Cut and Jobs Act a little bit. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act lowered taxes, or you talked about in terms of the standard deduction, how very few people today itemize. But one of the other things it did was it lowered rates for about three quarters of Americans. Now, that's true at all income levels, right? Not just the ultra wealthy, but people in more modest income brackets on average saw their tax rates fall. And on top of that, if we look at when that is set to expire, it's just a few years from now, in 2025. Now, I don't know about you, Ed, but whenever someone asks me, will something be extended? In other words, will Congress take action to keep things like these lower rates in play? The odds are, if you force me to take a side, I'm always going to take the under on congressional action. Betting on Washington gridlock and nothing happening is always the better bet. Now, doesn't mean it always happens. Sometimes people in Washington actually do something and they pass laws. But if you're going to make me take an over or under, I'm going to take the under, which means the Tax Cut and Jobs Act rate changes go away. People across the country, regardless of your state, even high tax states like New York and California, where the SALT deduction cap really hurt, on average, each state will see its individuals and its residents see lower tax bills again at all income levels. And if you're going to see, higher tax bills because the lower rates go away.
Right.
And if those lower rates go away and you're paying a higher tax rate down the road, well, wouldn't I rather pay a lower rate today? And again, all of that is assuming that just the expiration occurs. That doesn't even consider Congress going in there and actually saying, hey, all those things that we just talked about, the deficit, the debt, the promises, the crumbling infrastructure, all of these things that we need to do to improve the country, like we're not going to raise taxes at all. I find it hard to believe that today isn't one of the lowest rates that we will see in our lifetime, if not the lowest.
They're historically the lowest rates. And you should always get, like I said, the fundamental principle of all taxation, always, especially when it comes to IRAs, always pay taxes at the lowest rates.
Well, Ed, we covered a lot today. And, you know, we always say there are two sides to every coin. I'm not sure this coin has fallen yet. There seems to be more to debate here. In fact, so much more. This is such a meaty topic. I think we're going to have to pick it up again next week and keep going. What do you say?
Yeah, I like the coin on edge. It reminds me, I don't know if you're an old Twilight Zone fan, but remember that one episode where the guy flips the coin and he's on edge, it stands up. And that's the whole episode.
I do remember that. Although the one I remember most, of course, is Pig Face. You know, that.
all right. Well, let's not go there.
Anyway, right, fair
enough. It's on edge. And we're going to continue this, whether to convert or not to convert. And again, as we always say, this is to provide you information, both sides of the issue. So we'll see you next time. Part two on whether to convert or not to a Roth IRA on the great retirement debate.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.